Welcome to the weekly Dharma Talk podcast from the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling Buddhist Meditation Center. This week's talk by meditation instructor Eric Weinberg is entitled, Honoring the Third Jewel. Although much has been taught on experiencing one's own enlightened nature, Buddha, and the teachings on many subjects, Dharma, not much has been developed related to both community building or conduct in an ordinary sangha like ours. One of the aspirations we have in building our new home is that it not be just a magnificent place inside and out, but also a radiant, inspiring community place. That is up to us. It is our responsibility. We are like explorers of the third jewel. This talk is about the way we are having conversations as a sangha to uncover and engender our shared values. We aspire to make them lived values, not just nice words on paper. It is also about personal practice and how it supports and nourishes this great adventure. If you like our Dharma Talk series, please consider donating to Columbus Karma Teksum Choling at columbusktc.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming to the Dharma Talk today. A couple of weeks ago, Lama Kathy told me that she wasn't going to be able to be here and asked me to do a standalone talk, or she asked me if I would, and I said I would. So even though on the schedule it says Lama Kathy subject to be announced, well, it's me, and I'm about to announce it, so all the mysteries will be solved. I asked her what she thought would be a good subject for me to talk about. And what she said was interesting to me. We've been, you know, as a sangha, using circle conversations since the center burnt down to kind of be the structure of our community meetings so that we can... hear what everybody has to say with as few obstacles as possible. And the idea for that, you know, the way that that's really been developed a lot has been through something called restorative practices. So she asked me to do a talk on the Dharma and restorative practices. This is interesting because I went to Professor Google to see if anybody's ever done this before. And guess what? This is a new thing in the sense of Dharma. You know, in Buddhism, we often joke around that it's like a religion of lists of things, like there are two truths and there are three jewels and so on and so forth. And as I thought about it, I think all Buddhist communities for 2,600 years now have done a really, really excellent job in talking about and exploring the details of how to bring a life to the first two jewels, Buddha and Dharma, you know, Buddha being both the teacher and also your own true nature when we can get ourselves out of the way, and Dharma, which are the teachings that help us move in that direction. There's also teachings about what's called the enlightened Sangha, which are all the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and, you know, great teachers. We are also in Sangha, because Sangha just means community, and we're in what's called the ordinary Sangha. As far as I can tell, there's some information out there, but it's thin. There's not a lot there. So I'm actually pretty excited. In some sense, having our center burned down and putting us in this situation where we have to take an ordinary Sangha and do something really well and do something really good for ourselves and all beings without exception, puts us in an interesting place. We actually are kind of breaking new ground. So that's what this talk is about. Over the last couple of weeks, I've made some notes about thoughts that came to mind. I've tried to pull them together and tried to integrate the ideas around building healthy communities and Dharma practice. And that's what this talk is. So I'll be referring to my notes because I wrote some stuff out and I don't want to just like make it all out of my memory or free form, because it is new ground. It isn't like I've read Dharma Paths 6 times and so I can talk about some chapter there. So I thank you for being here, and at the end, you know, if there are questions, I certainly encourage you to get up and ask them. There won't necessarily be answers, but we can use them as really valuable points of conversation. We're in a place where we need to learn from each other. So that's going to be part of it. As usual, I'd like to begin, though, with the four-line refuge prayer. Now we have great cards, thanks to Steve. So we can chant it together. Even if you don't know it now, you can join us all, and we can take refuge as one community here this morning. Sanje Chudang Soki Chognam La Chang Chu Pardu Dakni Kyab Su Chi Daki Jin So Gi Pe Sunam Ki Drola Penshir Sanje Drupar Sho Sanje Chudang Soki Chognam La Chang Chu Pardu Dakni Kyab Su Chi Daki Jin So Gi Pe So Nam Ki Drola Pin Shir Sanje Rupar Sho Sanje Judang So Ki Chok Nam La Chang Chu Pardu Dak Ni Kyab Su Chi Daki jin so gi pe sunam gi drola pinchir sanje drupar sho. So this talk is going to be based on what we believe as Buddhists. The thing I like about Buddhism is there's not a lot that you need to believe in order to get on the path. Most religions have a lot of beliefs and not a lot of method. We've got only a couple beliefs and then we have a lot of method. So this is going to be about, based on these two beliefs, but really focused on method for both ourselves and for ourselves together as community or Sangha. So the two beliefs, you know, when we teach Dharma, it's always like this. It's another number, another list. It's always in three parts: view, meditation, and conduct. View is these two beliefs. Meditation is clearly taming our mind, and also within the context of community, it's like understanding and being able to articulate who we are, what we want to radiate, what our presence in the world is, and ways to work on that. And conduct is actually doing it, you know? So the view, these two beliefs, are simple. One, the first belief is that each of us have the same nature as the historical Buddha and every Buddha ever. We have just as much of it, and it's just as good. And the only difference is that we haven't quite woken up yet. We haven't quite uncovered it yet. That's what the practice, that's what meditation is for, is to uncover that. Same is true in terms of community. We need to have some community practices so that we can uncover the jewel that is the third jewel, the Sangha. So that's the view, is that you have a jewel-like, precious being, even though it doesn't feel like that a lot. We'll talk like that. The second one is that everything's interdependent. Most of the time, we don't feel connected. Our greatest suffering, really, if you boil it down, is feeling alone, feeling not alone, but lonely, kind of. It's all about me, something's happening to me, or something's not happening for me, or I'm confused, or whatever. And that's why the second belief is a belief. Until we wake up, we won't see it directly. But what that is that everything is interdependent. Therefore, everything we think, do, and say matters, which should is a scary thought for me, because mostly my mind is crazy. And I often think, do, and say things that I wish didn't have the impact that I end up having. However, knowing this, I can at least aspire to kindness and compassion and wisdom and insight and all those other goodies. So this third jewel has to do with both meditation, well, recognition of the nature of it, that it's, we've got something precious here, and it's worth our attention, and it's worth learning some stuff about how to do it well. Just like when we first learned meditation, we realized, ooh, this is worth our attention, and it's worth learning to do it well. There's benefits, and beyond the benefits, there's actual transformation. In terms of conduct, you know, when you meditate a lot, actually, one of the things you notice is you do change a little bit, and you do get some spontaneous goodness. All of a sudden, you wonder, oh man, that's cool. Where did that come from? And I think that's happened as a community too. For years, people have walked through the doors of Columbus KTC, and even when, you know, whether we've been in good shape, bad shape, or in different shape, and we've been through all that, people feel the warmth of it. That's kind of like the spontaneous wisdom that arises from the blessing of our teachers, especially our founder, Kempo Kartha Rinpoche, the blessing of our practice, that we've continued, even when things get a little thick, to keep on keeping on and realize, you know, I think it was, there was some Rinpoche I was listening to the other day, and he's been through a particularly difficult time for various reasons. And they said, well, what do you have to say about that after all of this? Don't you think you should be getting the goodies? Essentially, that's what the interviewer said. And he said, well, life has its ups and downs. The through line, though, is this view and then this meditation. And his conduct, obviously, in that interview at least, I don't know who he is in person, but he was full of, you know, equanimity, which is certainly one of the four measurable qualities. As a community, we go through that too. And when the center burned down, I think there were all kinds of feelings. Some were like, this is an opportunity for transformation. My thought, I'm a little bit strange. I looked at that fire and all that smoke billowing into the sky, and I thought, wow, that's a great smoke offering. The whole city is going to get blessed, you know, because all those sacred substances and things were going to fall on everybody, good and bad alike. But since then, we've had to figure out what we were going to do. Are we going to move, buy some other building? Are we going to rebuild? If we rebuild, what are we going to rebuild? What should it look like? We have had a lot of decisions to make as a community. And as the board has been really, really interested, and Lama Kathy has been really, really interested in getting as much input from everybody as we knew how to get. So we started having these circle conversations, which we call them safe conversations. In other words, anybody can come and say whatever they want without, you know, judgment or argument. Safe conversations about topics that matter, where everyone has an equal voice. Now, we've been kind of organically developing that. Now that we're almost ready to start digging the foundation of this new building, we're starting to think, we don't just want a magnificent place that when you go into the shrine room, everybody goes, ah, well, we want that, but not just that. We also want a place that actually radiates specific values, you know, who we really are. Who are we as a community here? So we had to figure that out. And really, we've used all three methods. So we've had a lot of input from our teachers. We really have. And it's been precious and valuable. And that wisdom has met the Dharma as it's practiced and taught here in Columbus. And when those two met, we started to get confidence that there's actually wisdom in the Sangha, in the community itself. But how do we get that? Is it just like letters to the board, conversations over lunch, or can we do that in a way that is really structured to unearth the wisdom that's in the Sangha? And that's what we've been going for. So as we've done that, we finally came to the place where in the last Sangha meeting we had two questions, and they were turned out to be good questions. I had a hand in helping to formulate those questions. I had an idea where it would go. Guess what? It didn't go where I thought. And that's good. That just shows you that as brilliant as I may be, and believe me, my mother will tell you, as brilliant as she may think I am, I may have come up with some good questions, and I think that's really important to be able to come up with good questions. But I didn't have the answers. As a group together, we found the answers. We had some good questions, and frankly, that's the only way those answers would have come up. There wouldn't, even Karmapa wouldn't have like actually held forth on that. He would have told you about what his aspirations are, but he wouldn't have told us, do this and don't do that. That's why it's valuable we learn to do this. So the questions were, what are the shared values and behaviors that have created the KTC that we know and love? Wow. I mean, every single person that came to this meeting probably has a different answer for that. And a lot of them probably actually echo and reflect each other too. So it was good to hear everybody say what they had to say about, you know, what shared values and behaviors have created the KTC we know and love. We can't assume we know that about each other. And by saying it to each other, gosh, I think we fall in love, or at least in like a little more with each other too. The second question was, when we move into our new space, how do we articulate our common values and expectations of people as community members as well as Dharma students? Because there is that. There are expectations, and it's really good to actually know what they are so that people don't keep stepping on each other's toes. And when you do just kind of let it be as loose as I like to live, it causes problems. So we came up with top six values. The first one was kindness. The second was welcoming. The third was openness. The fourth was clear communication. The fifth was community building. And the sixth was service or volunteering. Those are the six main things that our conversation pointed out has created the Columbus KTC that we know and love. And as we articulate it, and as we meditate on that and contemplate on it and see where we fit in and what we can do and how to train our minds so we can actually, each of us, be more open, be more clear. Think of things that will build community. Think of ways that we can volunteer and so on. We will grow personally. That's a guarantee. Those are all things that will just make you happy as you live your life. And we will grow as a community to be even more, I like the word radiant. We'll radiate those qualities into our community and our city and so on. And that'll be valuable. I have to tell you, after the land blessing ceremony, I don't know how many of you were there. It was extraordinary. The lamas that came down from New York even said, this was amazing. Because they do that particular ceremony, takes all day, like once or twice a year at KTD. And because it's so involved. And they said, it's rare, if ever, that it goes with that kind of energy and harmony and no mistakes, because there's a lot going on, and somehow all of us who don't know what we're doing, we didn't screw it up. And Jamie, who donated the tent and the porta-johns for the day, and built the fire pit with the gravel, and he did all this great stuff. So anyway, point being, he came out and walked the land and set up the floor and dug the fire pit and set up the porta-johns and did other things to make it a good space for us to be able to do this practice. And then he came back after the practice and was taking it down. And he said he could feel through his feet the blessing of that. He said it was not like anything he'd ever experienced in his life. And he's not a woo-woo kind of guy. He just said it was a palpable thing that happened. So the point being, when we do these things together intentionally, it does create a certain radiance, and it does create a blessing. And it is a blessing for anybody who even walks by. That's our intent, is to benefit ourselves and others without exception, meaning could be anybody walking by. Could be your closest friend. It could be your biggest enemy. Could be a politician you don't like. Whatever. Doesn't matter. Everybody needs blessing, probably especially the ones we don't like. as Kempo Kartha Rinpoche says, and Yi quotes on every single email he says, which I love, we all have a spark of goodness in us, a powerful potential for developing warmth, openness, tenderness, sanity, and an incomparable sense of well-being and richness that cannot be approached by material or physical wealth and comfort. That's true of us individually. It's one of the most beautiful little paragraphs I've ever read. It's also true of us as a community. So we've come upon this thing. We've had help from people. She's asked me not to mention her, so I won't. But we've had some help on working on the conduct of this third jewel, the Sangha, and bringing everything to the path, so to speak. How do we do that together? It's weird. As an individual, you know how to do that. You get, you know, their ways, and we teach those practices. But as a Sangha, you know, it's a new thing to act as one and yet be all these individuals together. So it requires a new skill set that's not based on our reactivity at all or our preferences at all, but is based on unconditional positive regard for others and listening, which is to say it's based on seeing the Buddha nature in each of us. It's based on having the view, and it's based on interdependence, because that's what listening is. Listening and sharing in honest and caring ways is actually honoring interdependence, you know? So what I wrote about that was, by understanding our part in creating a given situation, the harmony we aspire to, or even conflict when it happens, can begin to actively bring conversations about that engender listening hearts, because we're learning how to do that. So that's what we use these circle conversations for. I wanted to say that explicitly because I think it, at least at first, it was a little foreign for some people and maybe even a little uncomfortable. And I wanted you to know why and what we're aiming at when we do that, what that practice is. Just like sitting and doing even shamatha at first is a little uncomfortable. Yeah, it is, because this has got some goals and some disciplines involved. Let me tell you what the values are. The value is that we all get an equal voice, which is an unusual thing in religious communities, frankly. You know, the priest or the rabbi gets to sit on top, and they probably have somebody on top of them. In this, we all have an equal voice, no matter who we are. It gives us an opportunity for deep listening. Gives us an opportunity for more personal connection. And I think that's something that in this community we want to do more of. We do pretty good, but we could do better. And it's got to be based on mutual respect. I think that we're all in this together is the thing. And seeing it that way is the thing. It turns out that this kind of practice actually, in my mind at least, deepens personal practice too. And personal practice in turn will deepen this practice. I was thinking of the Lojong practices, which Lama Kathy talks about a lot. And so I'm going to just briefly go through a little bit about one of those that seems to fit with what I'm talking about. So if you were going to do Lojong practice on your own, with the idea in mind that you were going to truly benefit yourself and others, and others being this Sangha, as well as other Sanghas probably, but certainly directly this one, start with Guru Yoga. For those not familiar with it, briefly, it's a way of, you begin by just calming down. So just doing calm abiding meditation for a moment, and then using your imagination to see whoever you think your guru is, whether it's a particular teacher or the Buddha or some other holy enlightened being above your head. And imagine that they just are overflowing with light. They're made of light and overflowing with light, and that light is flooding you and healing you, purifying you, freeing you, doing all the good things that in your heart of hearts you deeply need and want. So you're being blessed. And that Buddha nature, that jewel within your own heart, is being uncovered little by little. And then the guru dissolves into light and into yourself and mixes inseparably with you, like pouring honey into tea. Once it's together, you can't get it apart, and everything's a little sweeter. And you just experience that. To experience that and to realize that all the rest of the Sangha can experience that is to like acknowledge your Buddha nature and everybody's Buddha nature, your connection to an enlightened teacher and everybody's connection, whether they know it or not. It builds strength. It builds a way to be friendly with ourselves and also to be friendly with others. And then, I can say a lot about Guru Yoga because I do it a lot because I love it. but I won't right now. And the thing that came to me about a practice to really deepen in yourself and really learn and bring to the Sangha is one of the slogans in the Lojong practices. It's the one that Lama Kathy talks about a lot. Three objects, three poisons, three seeds of virtue. That's just supposed to be a reminder of a whole teaching. Obviously, as a phrase on its own, it's a little obtuse. But what it is, it's a way of shifting perspective. When we encounter dualism, difficulties, all kinds of things in life, or great things that we rejoice in, we can either do our habitual thing of running away from the stuff we don't like and trying to grab and hold on to the stuff we do like, or we can use it to train the experience to train our mind in interdependence, the ways that we're connected, and the ways that we can be strengthened and send goodness out through the interwebs that interconnect us all. The three objects refer to the way that we objectify the world around us, the way we label people and things and experiences as friend and good or enemy and bad or neutral. Our minds want to lock into a one-dimensional perception based on whether or not we feel gratified and validated or upset and aggravated or just indifferent. It's kind of the way we go. The three poisons are clinging, and I mean clinging too tightly, aggression, and ignorance. They're called the three poisons because they are the root of suffering. Basically, we cling to what our self-perception is, who we think we are. We cling to what we think we want. We try to get away from what we don't want and from what we think we're not. And then we're basically ignorant of who we really are, and we're kind of indifferent, actually, to growth in terms of our general overall, you know, condition. Since we actually have what we don't want and we don't have what we do want, and we're clinging to something that seems to be constantly going away instead of the thing that we really are. That's why it's the root of suffering. So by clinging too tight to people and ideas and stuff, or longing too much for what was or for what we hope will be, we think of pain as punishment and happiness as reward. All that's clinging, all of it. And if we actually sit on our cushion and allow things to arise, or we're attentive to the way things come up in our day, you'll catch those habitual thoughts like something good happened. Oh, what a great reward. I must have done something good. Or something bad happened. What did I do wrong? The point is, it's all about me all the time. Aggression obviously has a lot of different forms. We all get angry and irritated, and hopefully not often, but sometimes violent. And obviously it causes a lot of problems. Some people think that you need anger to get going. I think if you sit with anger for very long, it'll wear you out. And ultimately that isn't what's going to get you going. Check it out for yourself and see if that's true. Ignorance is just not knowing. It isn't just not knowing something. It's the self-deception. It's thinking that we're something that we're not, and not realizing the precious jewel in us, and in us as a community as well. And the ego that wants to keep that charade going, it's pretty clever, and it keeps us from examining the places where we really need to grow, because growing often requires some discomfort. And because the self-image we're clinging to too tightly doesn't want to go away, you know? It's a drama that plays out all the time. I saw a movie about Leonard Cohen yesterday. Man, he was in a Zen monastery for a while, but I'll tell you, the clinging never let up. The ego trip never let up. He wrote great music, but man, I'll tell you, what suffering. So, having pointed that out, you say, so what can the three objects and the three poisons have to do with three seeds of virtue? As Pema Chodron says, our experience would write the formula as three objects, three poisons, and lots of misery. Or three objects, three poisons, and three seeds of confusion, bewilderment, and pain. Because the more the poisons arise and the bigger they get in our life, the more they drive us crazy. I like what she says. The point of Buddhism, though, isn't about getting into some shame or guilt trip about these objects and these poisons and all of that kind of thing. The point of the Lojong practice is that we can transform them. we can bring them to the path. And the way that we do that is we learn to lean into what we would run away from. And we learn to share what we would cling to and try to keep for our own little shininess. So by learning how to relate to the messiness of our humanity and the messiness of our community, we can learn to relate to everybody else's messiness too. And when we realize that everybody's messy, that is the root of compassion. And that's the root of kindness. And therefore, that's the root of your Buddhahood. Crazy, right? So how do you do the practice? So the three objects, we see them as either agreeable, disagreeable, and neutral. As we relate to these types of objects, the three mental poisons arise. It's all about me getting what I want, which is attachment. It's all about me not getting what I want, which causes hostility or anger. And why don't I have what I want? And why do I have what I don't want? Which is confusion. So the point is to use these poisons, because we all have them, as long as we have this kind of self-grasping, which we're working our way through. How do we use them to nurture the roots of virtue? And so here's the advice. I paraphrased this from Alan Wallace, who's a great Dharma teacher. He said, as we engage in the affairs of daily life, as soon as we become aware that attachment, craving, or clinging has arisen, right then, it's time to recognize that there are an immeasurable number of sentient beings who are subject to the same mental afflictions. Expand your awareness of this right on the spot. So if you're feeling bored by my talk, just think to yourself, there must be billions of people. It's Sunday. It's church. There got to be billions of people falling asleep in the pews right now. And feel it deeply. You're connected. Right? So feel it right on the spot. Feel it deeply instead of running away from it, you know, thinking, oh man, I wish I'd, oh, I can't wait till I, you know, on and on and on. Just say, oh, there must be so many people suffering what I'm suffering right now. So you let the aspiration arise. May my craving or my boredom or my anger or whatever suffering there is contain the suffering, whatever your label is for this one, of the countless sentient beings experiencing it. And may we all be endowed with the root of virtue that is freedom from whatever that suffering is. May my craving contain the craving of countless sentient beings experiencing it, and may we all be endowed with the root of virtue that is freedom from attachment. May they be free of this attachment that I am now experiencing. May we all be free of this attachment that I am now experiencing. Same way with anger, same way with bewilderment when you just get overwhelmed, confused, and you just don't know. Same thing. Every time. I can tell you, I first learned this in the early 2000s from Lama Kathy. And I can honestly say I was going through one of the most difficult times of my life. And out of a sense of deep suffering and ego clinging, I mean, I wasn't suicidal, but I just didn't care if it went away like now. I wasn't volitional about it, but if something happened, okay. And she gave me this. And you can literally do this all day long. Every moment there's some thought, there's some emotional thing arising that has to do with these three poisons. We all have it because it's the fundamental nature of what our ego trips are all about. I'm not against ego, by the way, but when you recognize the delusion of it and the poison of it when it's off center or out of balance, you have a few choices to make. And, you know, some of it's running away, which only, of course, makes things worse. Some of it is trying to explain it away, which only just makes the confusion worse. Or there's leaning into it. And this is a practice that helps you lean into it. So instead of running away or trying to read about 1,000 self-help books and think it better, there was a priest I knew once, and I used to come to him. I was a lot younger and talk with him, and he would just look at me and he said, Eric, some things you just can't think better. It's not going to help. This helped me a lot back then, and it became part of just the way I walk around town now. It's pretty wonderful when somebody got really, really angry at me the other day. It was a crowded traffic on 4th Street downtown, and I was stuck behind some people, and this guy was crossing the street outside of the crosswalk between traffic, and I didn't really see him because I was worried about not getting rear-ended and not rear-ending the next guy, and he got angry that I didn't see him there, and he kind of blew up, and he slammed the side view mirror of my car. I'm glad he didn't break it off. He was pretty strong, and he could have, but it just, you know how they fold, it just folded against my car, and I had to readjust. It took a couple days because he really knocked stuff inside of that housing out of whack. And I got afraid. He was angry. I was afraid. That's how it goes, right? And pretty much right on the spot, I was able to do this. It's only because, not because I'm so saintly or so good, it's just because I've been practicing this. It's become a habit for me. So I would encourage you to do it, because any situation that comes up, literally anything, it can open the door to using it for creating the seeds of virtue at the very least. It also creates a little space. And now and then, not in that case, but now and then, you even get enough spaciousness that you might have a creative solution come to mind, too. It's something really helpful to do or say or think. Because we do fundamentally have Buddha nature. It's in there. If we uncover it, if we give it a little space, it's amazing what'll come up. The mind of the Buddha, the thoughts of the Buddha about a situation should come up if you have that nature. So our job is just to give it space. That's part of this. That's how circle conversations work too. We're giving each other space. Instead of arguing with each other or holding forth our strong opinion about how it should be or how it should not be, by listening to each other, by understanding how that thing you're thinking about doing or how that thing you're doing is impacting others, which generally I don't know about you. I'm totally oblivious to until they tell me. It's like, oh no, really? That happened to you when I did that or said that? Or you think that would happen to do if we did it this way? It's like, yeah, wow. What would be better? You see what I mean? It opens up space for creativity and actually better community life. So it's the same thing. It's the same thing. So off the cushion, practice this. In the Sangha, we use the same dynamics in order to uncover the jewel that is Sangha. Alan Wallace says that the aspiration that your suffering contain the suffering of all beings and that we all be free of it, the aspiration itself is a root of virtue. See, that to me is totally insightful. It's very simple, but I haven't really heard it said that way other places. Just having the aspiration is the root of virtue. That's where all this goodness is going to grow from. The other thing is, when something great happens, same thing, make the aspiration that all beings could have such good fortune to rejoice in, creating more roots of virtue. Same thing in the community. When we get to all get together and do something really wonderful, don't worry about it too much. Instead, just wish for that to spread and grow and be a blessing for everybody. By doing that, you'll create more space for yourself to enjoy whatever it is that we're doing even more. There's no doubt about this. We've got over 1,000 years of mind training experience, and there's plenty of writing about that. And how it creates space and how this can unfold into, you know, a community of Buddhas in this world. So I think that's about all I had to say about this. You know, I want to encourage everybody to make meditation a part of your life. I'm pretty sure it probably all is there for all of you. And to see these things that we're trying to develop as a community, ways of working with each other, is also practice that's going to bring about some real goodness. Those of you who are here now, I'm thinking you'll probably be here when we open the doors of the new place. That puts you in a place, you know, you become part of the radiance that we want to create, that actually becomes a palpable experience of these six values that we identified in that community meeting. That's all up to us. It's totally up to us, our responsibility. Just knowing the words is kind of like trying to think things better. It's not going to be the way it happens. When we embody that and engender it, people will feel it, and that's what's going to help them and help us and spread some goodness in the community. So that is my stump speech for Dharma practice in personal life and in Sangha life. I actually left time for questions or comments. Sometimes I don't. Don's laughing. He does the podcast. He knows I can go on and on. So anybody, please go to the mic and talk to us.
Thanks, Eric. So I have an easy question for you. So could you talk, you talked a little bit about this at the beginning about dualism.
Yes.
So is there a way to explain that to somebody like me that's not very smart?
Oh, man, give me a break. I can explain it. I'll do my best. If you're not very smart, I'm in trouble. Usually, we have a subject-object relationship for everything we're thinking about or everything we're feeling. You know, I experience that, you know, or, you know, that's simply dualism, having that subject-object relationship of self and other. So as we practice the Dharma more and more, if the goal is like Ma Mudra, for instance, in our tradition, what that is realizing that this me that we think is limited by the boundaries of our skin isn't really, we can't pin that down. And yet there's all this thinking that goes in, I experienced that, or I think that, or I'm me and you're you, and right in this moment, that's dualism. When I realize the interdependence, in other words, it's not that you disappear all of a sudden if dualism isn't there, but my mind actually is more open to the interdependence between us, the connection, and I have some identity with that rather than just with this self that's me that I see in the mirror. There's a great Indian teacher, Ramana Maharshi, was one of my favorites, and somebody asked him, this is all recorded in a book, how do we treat others? And apparently he just looked and he said, there are no others. So from an enlightened perspective, he's dropped this thing of I, me, and mine. And he just sees the connection. So that's where it goes. We have to be disconnected in order to have self and other, right? So step by step, the Dharma brings us through a series of steps where we begin to see the connection as strongly as we see this thing called me. And we realize that, oh, this thing called me is actually much more than I thought it was. And it includes you, and you, and you, and you, and you. I think that's, yeah. Does that make sense?
Well, as a follow-up, so it has a lot to do with interconnectedness then?
Yes, interdependence, yeah, right. You could say that. One of the things that always confused me was this idea of emptiness, right? And somebody said to me once, well, empty of what? And then it was like, ah, so I think there's something there. I think there's a self there. So if it's, for instance, empty of dualism or empty of disconnectedness, then what do you got? If disconnectedness doesn't really exist, in other words, and you can make an argument for that scientifically even, even though our experience is that we're disconnected, that's just our experience. We also don't see the full spectrum of light. We don't see infrared. We don't see ultraviolet. We know it's there. We don't see x-rays. We know they're there. We use them. They used them to look at my hip without cutting me open first, and so on. There's a lot that we don't see. There's a lot of labels that we put on things that are just arbitrary. I mean, it's the old story. If I held up a pencil, what you would say, what is that? And you say, it's a pencil. However, if you were a dog, you would say, it's a chew toy. This thing itself has a reality that's beyond labels. And that's true of everything. So when we see that we're empty of labels, dualism starts to break down. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Does it?
Maybe we should spend some more time together.
That's what I thought. One of the reasons that guru yoga is a good thing to start with when you're doing Lojong practice is actually you start with self and other, with yourself being somebody desiring to wake up and imagining your guru who's already awake. And then you mix them into yourself inseparably. And if you just pause right there and think, who am I? Well, you're not the same as you were a minute ago, because all of a sudden, this honey, this sweetness is mixed inseparably into your tea or, you know, whatever. Some people say milk into water and so on and so forth. And so this sense of self is not as tight as we think it is. And that goes for the way we see the rest of life too. And that's where dualism begins to break down. Some people say, you know, I don't believe in all the woo-woo stuff. You know, this guru did this miracle or that does that miracle. From their side, if something like that happens in the phenomenal world, it's in part, I don't know the secrets, otherwise I'd bake miracles for you. But in part, it's because they see the interdependence and they can work with it. It's actually something that's obvious to them. They're connected to things, so they can work with them. When we feel disconnected, then it's more difficult to work with. Does that make sense? And we're all just, I think it's an experiential thing that we do. Until we're there, though, that's why we have things like these circle conversations. It gives us we're not omniscient like we will be when we become Buddhas, right? So we don't need to be. We can sit and have a conversation about the things that matter. And we'll gain wisdom and perspective from each other, even if we can't be omniscient at this moment. Someday, some lifetime. For some of us like me, it could be a lot of them. I don't care. Because we've got this, and this is good. So, anyway, now I'm 5 minutes over. I hope I didn't confuse everything with that last piece. You can forget all about that if you want. But let's dedicate the merit, the virtue of having gotten together to consider the Dharma and to consider how we could build a radiant Sangha. May the merit of this gathering be a blessing for ourselves, for everybody who is or will become a part of this community, this Sangha. And in turn, may that become waves of goodness, touching the city, the state, the country, the whole world. And with this aspiration in mind, that what we're doing actually can bring about the enlightenment of all beings, we dedicate our merit. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Dharma Talk. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. If you did, please subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. To learn more about the Columbus Karma Teksum Choling or to donate to support our Dharma Talk series, please visit our website at columbusktc.org. The opening and closing music for the podcast is Tibetan Flute Song by Tamding Arts at tamdingarts.com. Please join us again next week for another Dharma Talk.